Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo, serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, where each week we delve into little-known healthcare and hospital hazards, as well as other fringe topics that affect your health and well-being. I'm so happy you've taken the time to join me, and today I have lots to share with you. So, let's dig right in, shall we? Now, I'm not a big television watcher, but I do have a few favorite shows, and one of them was Nashville that used to air on ABC, but for some reason got canceled last year. I always thought the city, Nashville, was a very cool place, maybe because I've spent a lot of time in Nashville many years ago when Bob and I had a small record label. We ran around Music City with Conway Twitty's Daughters, enjoyed the Bluebird Cafe, Ryman Auditorium, one of the world's preeminent listening rooms. We had backstage passes at Opryland, met Grandpa Jones, got to know some awesome talent at the National Songwriters Association. It was a fun time. So when the show was canceled, I was kind of bummed out. But guess what? Through the power of the people, the voice of the fans, the show was picked up by CMT, Country Music Television. And here's what the CMT president had to say. He said, every year there would be some conjecture about whether or not the show might become available, and when it was available from ABC, the fans took over. In my entire career, I've not seen anything like the seismic groundswell that hit us from every direction about how CMT needs to save Nashville. So there you have it. Now, I know in the grand scheme of things, this is not an important program. Lives are not at risk if this show airs or not. Yet, when individual people express their opinions, when single voices are counted, things can change. A seismic groundswell that hit us from every direction. Wow. Can you imagine if we applied this principle to things that actually do matter? Just saying. And that's why this show is called Speak Up. Well, keep this in mind as I hover over some recent happenings.
Ready.
Last week, I talked about the invasion of privacy that is going on with low-flying Cessna airplanes, as well as with our local law enforcement agencies with the use of cell site simulators known as stingrays. These devices, also known as dirt boxes, spoof cell phone towers, tricking any device within range into connecting into the stingray instead of the tower, thus allowing law enforcement to sweep up your conversations as well as locate and track the person in possession of a specific phone or other electronic device. Well, here's some good news. Last week, an Illinois law went into effect banning the use of stingrays to track the location of phones and steal private information without a warrant in most situations. The legislation stipulates that before deploying a stingray device for location tracking, law enforcement agencies must get a warrant, with only a few exceptions. Warrantless use of these devices will only be allowed in certain specific emergency situations. Under the law, if a court finds that a law enforcement agency used a cell site simulator to gather information in violation of the limits of the act, then the information is presumed to be inadmissible in any judicial or administrative proceeding. Can you imagine the impact this is going to have on federal surveillance programs? The federal government funds the vast majority of state and local stingray programs, attaching one important condition. And I mentioned this last week. They require agencies acquiring this technology to sign non-disclosure agreements. This throws a giant shroud over the program, even preventing judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys from getting information about the use of stingrays in court. The feds then sell the technology in the name of anti-terrorism efforts. With these non-disclosure agreements in place, most police departments refuse to release any information on the use of stingrays. The feds can share and tap into vast amounts of information gathered at the state and local level through a system known as the Information Sharing Environment, or ISE. In other words, stingrays create the potential for the federal government to track the movement of millions of Americans with no warrant, no probable cause, and without people even knowing about it. The federal government encourages and funds the stingrays at the state and local level across the United States, thereby gaining access to a massive data pool on Americans without having to expend the resources to collect the information itself. This new Illinois law represents a major blow to the surveillance state and a win for privacy. And more states need to follow suit, proving what I said to be true about Nashville. Once we become aware of an issue with negative impacts, it is our duty and our responsibility to do something about it, to speak up. There is a power in a single voice that creates the seismic groundswell that demands to be heard. Well, I have much more to talk about, but let's just take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Speaking of a voice that demands to be heard, I'd like to share a friend of mine with you. She hosts a podcast called Mrs. Green's World on our very own speakuptalkradio.com. And she understands the value in speaking up. Here she is.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I'd love you to be a part of my world. It's a world filled with amazing people, interesting and engaging ideas, all related to the preservation of this great planet of ours. We interview people from all over the world about topics that I know will interest you, and we educate people in fun, informative ways and inspire them to take small steps so that together we can make a big impact. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and become a part of our world.
I know you'll just love a radio program with topics from the dangers of fracking and the harmful chemicals in our food and our cleaning products to giving tips on a greener way to live and entertain. Mrs. Green will motivate you to wake up and smell the roses while there are still roses to smell. Listen to a brand new episode each week at speakuptalkradio.com. And be sure to spend some time at her website, mrsgreensworld.com. That's mrsgreensworld.com. After the show, be sure to visit the website, speakupandstayalive.com, for more life-saving information. Plus, that's where you can purchase the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate, Hospital Survival Guide. Bring the book to the hospital with you. It's the best way to stand out, and in a positive way. Give a meaningful and useful gift that really says, I care. Give the gift of healthcare safety. Purchase the book, the patient safety logs, and throw in some of those icebreaker cards. It's a one-size-fits-all present that everybody needs. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com or call me, 440-725-5462. Well, we're back. I am Pat Rulo, your host. Well, here's a frightening yet relevant question. Are iPads and cell phone screens turning our kids into psychotic junkies? Oh, the answer is yes. We now have to deal with what we can call digital heroin. This is from an article written by Dr. Nicholas Carderis, who has a book titled Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trance. He writes, Susan bought her 6-year-old son, John, an iPad when he was in the first grade. She thought, why not let him get a jump on things, she told me during a therapy session. John's school had begun using the devices with younger and younger grades, and his technology teacher had raved about their educational benefits, so Susan wanted to do what was best for her son, who loved reading and playing baseball. She started letting John play different educational games on his iPad. Eventually, he discovered the game Minecraft, which the technology teacher assured her was just like electronic Lego. Remembering how much fun she had as a child building and playing with the interlocking plastic blocks, Susan let her son Minecraft his afternoons away. At first, Susan was quite pleased. John seemed engaged in creative play as he explored the cube world of the game. She did notice that the game wasn't quite like the Legos she remembered. After all, she didn't have to kill animals and find rare minerals to survive and get to the next level with her beloved old game. But John really seemed to like playing, and the school even had a Minecraft club, so how bad could it be? Still, Susan couldn't deny she was seeing changes in John. He started getting more and more focused on his game and losing interest in baseball and reading while refusing to do his chores. Some mornings he would wake up and tell her that he could see the cube shapes in his dreams. Although that concerned her, she thought her son just might be exhibiting an active imagination. As his behavior continued to deteriorate, she tried to take the game away, but John threw temper tantrums. His outbursts were so severe that she gave in, still rationalizing to herself over and over again that it's educational. Then one night, she realized that something was seriously wrong. I walked into his room to check on him. He was supposed to be sleeping, and I was just so frightened. She found him sitting up in his bed, staring wide-eyed, his bloodshot eyes looking into the distance as his glowing iPad lay next to him. He seemed to be in a trance. Beside herself with panic, Susan had to shake the boy repeatedly to snap him out of it. Distraught, she could not understand how her once healthy and happy little boy had become so addicted to the game that he wound up in a catatonic stupor. There's a reason that the most tech-cautious parents are tech designers and engineers. Steve Jobs was a notoriously low-tech parent. Silicon Valley tech executives and engineers enroll their kids in no-tech Waldorf schools. Google founders went to a no-tech Montessori school, as did Amazon creator Jeff Bezos and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales. Many parents intuitively understand that ubiquitous glowing screens are having a negative effect on kids. We see the aggressive temper tantrums when the devices are taken away, and the wandering attention spans when children are not perpetually stimulated by their hyper-arousing devices. Worse, we see children who become bored, apathetic, uninteresting, and uninterested when not plugged in. But it's even worse than we think. We know that these iPads, smartphones, and Xboxes are a form of digital drug. Recent brain imaging research is showing that they affect the brain's frontal cortex, which controls executive functioning, including impulse control, in exactly the same way that cocaine does. Technology is so hyper-arousing that it raises dopamine levels, the feel-good neurotransmitter most involved in the addiction dynamic. This addictive effect is why Dr. Peter Weibrow, director of neuroscience at UCLA, calls screens electronic cocaine, and Chinese researchers call them digital heroin. That's right. Your kid's brain on Minecraft looks like a brain on drugs. No wonder we have a hard time peeling kids from their screens and find our little ones agitated when their screen time is interrupted. In addition, hundreds of clinical studies show that screens increase depression, anxiety, and aggression, and can even lead to psychotic-like features where the video gamer loses touch with reality. Once a kid has crossed the line into true tech addiction, treatment can be very difficult. Indeed, he says, I have found it easier to treat heroin and crystal meth addicts than lost in the matrix video gamers on Facebook-dependent social media addicts. According to a 2013 policy statement by the American Academy of Pediatrics, 8 to 10-year-olds spend 8 hours a day with various digital media, while teenagers spend 11 hours in front of screens. 1 in 3 kids are using tablets or smartphones before they can talk. Meanwhile, the Handbook of Internet Addiction by Dr. Kimberly Young states that 18% of college-age internet users in the U.S. suffer from tech addiction. Once a person crosses over the line into full-blown addiction, drug, digital, or otherwise, they need to detox before any other kind of therapy can have any chance of being effective. With tech, that means full digital detox. No computers, no smartphones, no tablets. The extreme digital detox even eliminates television. The prescribed amount of time is 4 to 6 weeks. That's the amount of time that is usually required for a hyper-aroused nervous system to reset itself. But that's no easy task in our current tech-filled society where screens are everywhere. A person can live without drugs or alcohol, but with tech addiction, digital temptations are everywhere. So, how do we keep our children from crossing this line? It's not easy. The key is to prevent our 4-, 5-, or 8-year-olds from getting hooked on screens to begin with. That means Lego instead of Minecraft, books instead of iPads, nature and sports instead of TV. If you have to, demand that your child's school not give them a tablet or a Chromebook until they're at least 10 years old. Others recommend 12. And this conversation is not even addressing the radiation aspect. Have honest discussions with your child about why you are limiting their screen access. Eat dinner with your children without any electronic devices at the table, just as Steve Jobs used to have tech-free dinners with his kids. Don't fall victim to the distracted parent syndrome. As we all know from social learning theory, a monkey see, a monkey do.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
It's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. Is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Research on diagnostic mistakes suggests that most diagnoses that occur in primary care practice are related to the basic elements of the office visit. 8 in 10 misdiagnoses were due in part to problems in the patient encounter, such as errors during the physical exam or medical history taking. 1 in 5 mistakes was related to referrals, such as a decision not to consult an appropriate expert. 16% of misdiagnoses involved patient-related factors such as a patient's failure to provide accurate medical histories or miscommunication between the patient and health professional. Poor test result follow-up and tracking contributed to 15% of missed diagnoses, and 14% of the mistakes involved other testing mix-ups such as misinterpretations or the mistaken belief that the result was not serious enough to warrant hospital admission or further investigation. According to a report in the BMJ Quality and Safety Journal, and this is important, each year in the United States, approximately 12 million adults or, get this, 1 out of 20 patients who seek outpatient medical care are misdiagnosed in a way that could cause severe harm. These alarming statistics are further reinforced by a new study from the Institute of Medicine that was published just this past September that predicts, in quote, most people will experience at least one diagnostic error, an inaccurate or delayed diagnosis in their lifetime, sometimes with devastating consequences, unquote. Well, what does this say about the current level of patient care in the United States? It says that everyone, physicians, patients, family members, need to pay more attention to what is going on. It says that we as patients tolerate a healthcare system where we often do not experience full disclosure from our doctors. It says that our system does not encourage collaboration and communication between doctors and patients. And it says that each of us will face a potentially life-threatening situation over the course of our healthcare lives that could be addressed and reversed if we paid attention. The current system is poorly designed to support an accurate diagnosis, because our doctors are limited by the time they are allowed to spend with us. So as a result, some do not always follow up with tests and procedures that they have ordered. And I just had that happen. Remember a few weeks ago when I recounted a great patient experience? Clean waiting room chairs, on-time appointment, and attentive physician? Well, that disappeared when now, 3 weeks later, I still haven't heard back from him with my test results. But I did hear back from the babysitter, the patient portal. The patient portal is a hopefully secure online website that gives patients the convenience of 24-hour access to personal health information from anywhere with an internet connection. Using a username and a password, patients can view their health information online. To ensure faster feedback, according to government guidelines, lab results must be posted in the patient portal within 96 hours of the doctor's office receiving them, whether your doctor has seen the results or not. The benefits are, it also eliminates the practice that some doctors have of notifying you only if something is wrong, or just leaving you with a very vague, everything looks good. For the most part, seeing the actual values and numbers and words is empowering, but there is a chance that misunderstanding the results could cause you to worry. Which brings me to today's question. Is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Well, we know that a babysitter is a person engaged to care for children when the parents are not home. Is the patient portal technology not engaged to care for patients when the doctor is too busy? Does the patient portal take the place of an actual personal follow-up? Am I to really understand all that I read on my patient portal? Is the patient portal some kind of a babysitter set up to excuse the doctor of any further conversation? I mean, I thought it was all about accessing my information and empowering me as the patient. Well, here's why I ask. A day after the ultrasound on my thyroid, I received an email that said, "Your test results are in. Log on to the internet to the patient portal," which I did. Luckily, I practice what I preach because I have copies of my previous results so I could compare. And what I found is that the thyroid nodules are getting a bit bigger. Big enough to biopsy? Big enough to worry about? Growing at a safe pace? Or should I be concerned? Well, I don't know, because here's all I know. The test results say the right thyroid lobe is 5x1x3x1x4 cm. There is a small 2 mm cystic area in the midpole and another in the superior pole. There is a 4 mm hypoechoic nodule in the isthmus on the right side. The isthmus measures 1.4 millimeters in thickness. The left lobe of the thyroid is 4.6x1.3x1.4 cm. There is a 1 mm mid to superior nodule and a 2 mm inferior pole nodule. Incidentally noted is a 2.1x0.4x0.9 cm lymph node adjacent to the lateral right thyroid lobe. Whew. Am I in trouble? Who knows? Because no one has followed up. So that is why I ask the question, is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Well, with the frightening statistic I gave you at the beginning of this conversation, that 1 out of 20 patients who seek outpatient medical care are misdiagnosed in a way that can cause severe harm, I would think that follow-up by a live human being communicated in such a way that the patient has full understanding of the results should be mandatory. Diagnostic errors are often incredibly harmful, as they may lead to delays in treatment, lack of treatment, inappropriate or unnecessary treatment, all of which can have physical, psychological, and financial consequences. So what can you do to protect yourself, especially from the patient portal and test results that go without personal follow-up? Well, first, be proactive. Use all available resources to learn everything you can about your health, your condition, your tests and procedures and medications. Sadly, we must be our own doctors. And here's an important one. Never assume that no news is good news when you have not received the results of a test or procedure. Make sure you are diligent, like a dog with a bone, about receiving the results and discussing them in detail with your doctor. And if your doctor doesn't call you, don't allow the patient portal to be a babysitter. Call him or her, email, whatever. But be sure that they have seen the results and can communicate exactly what the results mean to your future health. And finally, be informed and involved in all health decisions. I don't know about you, but I'm too old and too wise to need a babysitter. I don't want dazzling technology. I want a physician who is as engaged as I am. I guess I have to keep looking. And again, speaking up, I have another wonderful friend who, like myself, before my mom passed away, is a caretaker for her elderly mom. And she has an amazing podcast called the AgeWise Podcast on our very own speakuptalkradio.com. And I would like for you to meet her.
Hi, this is Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise Podcast, where we hear from the healthcare system's hidden workforce, the millions of family caregivers whose stories of devotion and courage will shock and inspire you. Join me as we shake up the conversation on care and know you're not alone. Listen to a brand new episode every week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, visit the AgeWise website. That's AgeWYZ.com.
My friend Jana believes that by sharing positive stories and having frank conversations about aging, that we could shed some light on the magnitude of the issues facing our rapidly aging nation. Tune in for tips, useful links, and entertaining stories of unwavering courage from the field. I know you'll love her just as much as I do. Start at her website, agewise.com. That's AGEWYZ.com. Well, there you have it. Another jam-packed day filled with harms and charms that either endanger or improve our health, our freedom, our privacy, and our sanity. It's enough to cause a bit of anxiety, isn't it? But that's when taking action can help. If anything we talked about today hits a nerve, do some more research and then do what you can to make a difference. Speak up, like bringing back Nashville. I know we can create a seismic groundswell that hits from every direction. And while you're becoming an activist, you may need to find a natural solution to help face the tough battle of day in and day out. May I suggest something that helps me to feel grounded and calm? Essential oils from our Tiny Drops collection. I always start with lavender. Considered the most common essential oil, lavender oil benefits include having a calming, relaxing effect. It's considered a nervous system restorative and helps with inner peace, sleep, restlessness, irritability, panic attacks, nervous stomach, and general nervous tension. The Handbook of Essential Oils states that there have been a number of clinical trials involving the inhalation of lavender essential oil that indicate a reduction in stress and anxiety. Further research demonstrates lavender's ability to lower anxiety in patients undergoing coronary artery bypass surgery and in people visiting the dentist. My next go-to oil is frankincense. Frankincense is great for treating depression and anxiety because it provides a calming and tranquil energy as well as a spiritual grounding. Mixed with lavender oil in a 1-to-1 ratio in an aroma hand massage, frankincense was found to have a positive effect on pain and depression in hospice patients with terminal cancer. So why do essential oils work for anxiety? Because our sense of smell triggers powerful emotional responses. We process so much information through our sense of smell, in particular in an area of the brain next to the limbic region, and this is the area of emotional processing and memory recall. Aromatherapy can be obtained by using it in a bath, as direct inhalation, hot water vapor, a vaporizer, or a humidifier, a fan, a vent, and so on. And since they're so potent, it's important to dilute and blend them with a carrier oil, such as sweet almond or coconut oil, which we have at our website, tinydropseo.com. You can apply the blend directly to an affected area or on the bottoms of your feet, the rims of your ears, using compresses in baths or through massage. This is perfect for any time or especially just before bed. So I just thought I'd share this natural solution with you. And for many other uses and oils, visit my health-based line of essential oils at tinydropseo.com. And the EO stands for essential oils. tinydropseo.com. Or you can call me to order 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. Tiny drops, big results. All right, we are running out of time. But if you want more exciting and relevant programs to listen to, head over to speakuptalkradio.com. Topics range from health to empowering women, pets to real estate, new mommies to new millionaires, plus nearly 100 author interviews between me and some amazing and talented writers. So just because today's show is coming to a close does not mean you are done listening. You can enjoy the rest of your day at speakuptalkradio.com. That's speakuptalkradio.com, where we are always on for you. Time always goes by so quickly when we're together. But the good news is, I'll be back next week. Same time, same place, but never the same information. And tune in to my additional program called Speak Up Talk Radio, heard every Sunday evening at 6 o'clock p.m. on WHK AM 1420. Until we meet again, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Did you know that over 70 hospitals nationwide are using essential oils to fight germs, improve mood, and reduce stress? I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Now you too can have access to these amazing natural health options. For example, you can use lavender to reduce stress, sweet orange to improve your mood, peppermint to improve focus and energy and alleviate those headaches. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.